outside. And all them crazy murderers will never run from inside. You try to keep me down cause you see no joy. All them knows them from, so you call a man a boy. I ain't a tie, can't just see. Open up your eyes.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real.
And here we go, folks. It is Sunday, January the 11th, 2026, the year of our Lord Jesus Christ, King of the Gentiles. And you are listening to today's edition of The Ugly Truth broadcast. Welcome to the program, folks. Hope you're all doing well. Those of you of goodwill, as we say often, we don't wish our enemies well, folks, because, as I said on the last program, just take a look at what has happened in Gaza. What's happening on the streets of Iran right now, and you'll have a pretty good idea of what it is that our enemies have in store for all of us. Okay, so when we say those of you of goodwill, what we mean, of course, by that are Gentiles who do not want to incinerate the world and enslave those who are left alive. And yes, folks, this is the real deal. You know, it's one thing that our non-Gentile counterparts do often, which is they ridicule conspiracy theories, quote unquote, that they are trying to take over the world and all of the rest of this. But again, folks, if you just actually sit down with an open mind and read what it is that they consult for themselves as far as their religious literature goes, it's very clear there that they do plan to take over the world and to destroy all of those who fight back. Just go and read the book of Isaiah, just one, for example, where it says, you know, the nation and the people that will not bow down before you will be utterly destroyed. Okay, so clearly here you have the imagery of a supreme being or a group of supreme beings and the lesser beings bowing down before them in subservience, and if they don't bow down in subservience, then they will be destroyed. This isn't yours truly making this up, folks. This is right there. And it's been sitting there as an open secret for thousands of years for people to just study for themselves and understand. Anyway, folks, we have a lot to talk about today, lots going on. None of it really good. On that note, though, however, I do want to wish a very Merry Christmas to our Orthodox Christian friends out there. I received an email from one of the listeners who wished me a Merry Christmas, even though Christmas for the Western world was on the December the 25th. But nevertheless, he reminded me that in the Orthodox world, closer, you know, farther to the east, closer to the Holy Land, they celebrate it in the early part of January. And so we want to wish everybody out there within the Orthodox Christian world a very Merry Christmas. And on that note, folks, let's see, a few quick things to get out of the way. I did receive another email from someone who took offense to my referring to Jesus Christ as King of the Gentiles. And he says, what proof do you have that Jesus was a Gentile? And I say, well, I don't have any proof that he was a Gentile. Although there is a very fascinating lecture given by a history professor at the American University in Beirut. And he talks about how it's just common knowledge in the Levant that Jesus originally was a Phoenician, that he was not a Judean or a Judite, that even though he may have lived in Judea, that he was racially speaking, he was a Phoenician, which, of course, is the modern-day country of Lebanon, folks. But aside from that, and anybody interested in listening to this fascinating lecture that that this professor gave on this, fascinating, and he uses all sorts of very compelling pieces of evidence going back 2,000 years, folks, about how it was just generally accepted, especially in Lebanon, that Jesus was of Phoenician descent, that he was not a Jew or a Judahite or a Judean. But anyway, folks, a couple of things that I want you to think about, underscoring the Gentile nature of who Jesus was. Forget about bloodlines. Just think about the thought processes and the way that he did things. Okay, he wasn't out for vengeance. He didn't believe in an eye for an eye. He never referred to the creator of the universe as Yahweh. He referred to him as my father. And two very interesting things, folks, to consider. When Jesus was describing himself to his followers, he said, I am the Alpha and the Omega. Now, folks, those are the letters of the Greek alphabet, A and Z, meaning he's the beginning and the end. He didn't use the letters from the Aramaic alphabet. He used the letters from the Greek alphabet. I am the Alpha and the Omega. And later, when he assigns Peter, Simon, the role of starting this new church, you know, he changes Simon's name to Peter. Again, folks, a Greek and a Latin word, okay, meaning stone. He didn't give him the equivalent in Aramaic, which would have been the language that Jesus spoke. So clearly, folks, at least according to, assuming that everything that we read in the Gospels is the absolute gospel truth, meaning that it's historically accurate, Jesus is giving us little clues here, little hints. He knew that his, you know, his way of thinking, his way of doing things was never going to fly with the Jews, okay? He knew that they are just too far gone, that this is so foreign to them, so alien to them, so blasphemous to them, you know, this love thy neighbor business and turn the other cheek and all of the rest of it. Jesus knew that this was going to be a Gentile philosophy, okay, that it would never fly with the Jews. And clearly, folks, he was correct in that. So that's just a little bit of a divergence for today, folks, something to think about, though, because this is one of the missions that we have here at this humble little informational endeavor, which is to awaken the Gentiles and to make them understand that they have nothing in common with their Judaic overlords who are seeking their destruction and their subjugation. They have nothing in common. Okay, Jesus was sent for us so that we could protect ourselves as his sheep against these wolves who are hell-bent, no pun intended, upon our destruction. And we have to, you know, this is the identity politics, folks, that we have to really wrap around ourselves, our identity as Gentiles, okay? We are the chosen people, if ever such a thing existed. We are the chosen people. This planet was made for us. It wasn't made for them. You can see the proof of this now with as much control as they have over the world, over the world's affairs, how everything is just falling apart. It's falling apart, it's blowing up, it's burning down. Everything that they touch just becomes irradiated and is destroyed. So this is something that we have to think about, folks, in the days, weeks, and years ahead, assuming that we're all alive to carry on this conversation. Another interesting thing, folks, that I wanted to bring up very quickly, relative to last week's discussion about Venezuela. I received an extremely interesting article from one of our listeners. This comes from the Wall Street Journal, folks. The title of it is Secret U.S. Government Memo Authorizing Drug Boat Strike Cites Chemical Weapons Threat. Now, those of you who heard the last program and who have been following what we've been saying on this humble little informational endeavor ever since the strikes on these boats began, one of the things that we have said is that there's a lot of information related to all of this that we just don't know. Okay. Not that it's necessary. I mean, if there are drugs on those boats, then it's an act of war to bring them into this country, and the president is justified in doing whatever needs to be done in order to protect the American people from these drugs. Okay. But we postulated, and we continue to postulate, that there's much more to it than just that. That it may be that there are nuclear weapons on those boats. Maybe this is some type of operation on the part of the Israelis to smuggle, you know, really deadly stuff into this country in order to destroy us, because that's their mission, folks. Anyway, the title of the piece, as I said, Secret U.S. Government Memo Authorizing Drug Boat Strike Cites Chemical Weapons Threat. Now, the way that it is written, folks, first of all, it's interesting to note that it's a secret memo, okay? The U.S. government, the President of the United States, Donald Trump, did not make this thing available for the public. There are a couple of unnamed anonymous sources here from Trump's administration talking about this. And even though they use this within the context of characterizing fentanyl as a chemical weapon, what kind of fentanyl is it, folks? Okay, have the Israelis come up with some new version of this that literally could wipe out the half of the country within the span of just a month? You know, that it's so potent and so dangerous that, you know, just to, I mean, I've heard stories about how dangerous fentanyl is, that police officers who have conducted searches on vehicles where there was fentanyl, there was a story here, I don't know, a year or so ago, about a sheriff's deputy that had inadvertently touched some money that had some fentanyl dust on it, and she went into convulsions and stopped breathing. They had to give her the Narcan, whatever it's called, to revive her, but just from touching it, didn't even ingest it. So is there this new form of fentanyl that they have cooked up at the IIBR, the Israeli Institute for Biological Research, and this is what the president is targeting? We don't know, folks. Again, there's, you know, it's like the fin of a shark just barely sticking out of the water. And so the reason that we bring this up, folks, is because there's a lot of noise out there. Noise pollution, really, I think, is the better way of describing it, particularly within the quote-unquote conspiracy movement. The president is being run through the meat grinder, as usual, saying that he's an imperialist and all of the rest of that, but we just don't know what is really going on in Venezuela. On that note, folks, I want to read something here very quickly. One of the things that we talked about on the last program is the possibility that the Israelis had chewed their way into the Venezuelan government, and that this was not the same government that took power after Hugo Chavez died over a decade ago. That would certainly make sense, folks. Venezuela would be one of those countries where the Israelis would want to chew their way in and to establish it as a, you know, a forward operating base for peddling drugs, using it as a place to, you know, to engage in hostile actions against the United States. And we theorize that it's very possible that Venezuela and all of that oil that she has, this could also be used as a means of laundering dirty money that the government of Israel brings in through drugs, through human trafficking, just every kind of dirty business that you can imagine. Well, anyway, in doing a little bit of research for today's topic, I pulled out my book by former Israeli Mossad agent Victor Strofsky, By Way of Deception. You really have to read his two books, folks, By Way of Deception and The Other Side of Deception. Any of these pundits out there who render any kind of commentary on Israel and the kinds of dirty business that Israel has always been involved in and has not talked about Victor Strofsky's books, they don't know what they're talking about. You have to read these books in order to understand. Anyway, I came across a very interesting section here where Strofsky is talking about just one of the thousands of different illegal trafficking operations that Israel is involved in. He writes as follows: in the midst of all of this, Mossad had made its first contact with the opium growers in Thailand. The Americans were trying to force farmers to stop producing opium and to grow coffee instead. The Mossad's idea was to get in there, help them grow coffee, but at the same time help them export opium as a means of raising money for Mossad operations around the world. Okay. Now, this may sound like, it may sound like something that doesn't need to be reiterated, but it does, folks. Okay. We have to, this monster is much bigger than most people give it credit for being, much bigger and much more dangerous. Now, the reason that I was looking this up, folks, I actually stumbled across it because I was looking for something else. And that thing for which I was searching for today's program is as follows. It actually is in Victor Strofsky's other book, The Other Side of Deception. And he writes as follows. He talks about the plan to destabilize the Jordanian government. And the way that they were going to do that was by flooding the Jordanian economy with counterfeit money that had been printed in Israel. He writes as follows, quote, a high influx of counterfeit currency causing distrust in the market, arming religious fundamentalist elements similar to Hamas and the Muslim Brotherhood, and assassinating leading figures who are symbols of stability, causing riots in the universities and forcing the government to respond with harsh measures to lose popularity. Okay. He's talking about doing to Jordan decades ago what undoubtedly the Israelis have done to Iran today. What we see taking place on the streets of Iran right now, folks, is it's a big deal. It's a bad thing, okay? This isn't just the typical, like the Arab Spring, okay, where you had agitators who were able to capitalize on and take advantage of the, well, quite frankly, folks, the stupidity of young people. That's really what it boils down to. You know, it's not hard to talk young people into doing stupid things. During the time of the Arab Spring, you had genuine grievances, but the young people got so caught up in the emotion of the moment that they didn't consider the possibility that maybe they were being played. Now, the same thing is happening in Iran right now, folks, but there is some real meat behind the protests because the Iranian currency has collapsed just in the last couple of weeks, okay? 42% inflation rate as of right now, and that's just since December the 28th. So this is a real problem because we know that Netanyahu and his fellow terrorist Jews plan to destroy Iran. They have been for thousands of years. And there, it appears that they are using this as the launching pad for doing that. Now, the problem with it, folks, is that the president, once again, the president of the United States, Donald Trump, finds himself in a very difficult position. We have here in this country what appears to be a budding civil war over the death of the woman in Minneapolis. And as we predicted on this program years ago, folks, that if Trump did get back in, that we would see George Floyd Part 2 take over relatively soon, and it would appear as though that is what is coming. And you have the president saying things, remember, folks, just saying things about how he's going to support the Iranian people. And folks, again, I hate to have to beat a dead horse, but I'm going to anyway. The president is not a warmonger. He hates war. He's not a regime change person, even though Maduro has been taken out of Venezuela, whether he was arrested or whether he was rescued, we don't know. But the fact that the president has not installed the Zionist choice for president, this woman, this poet, whatever she is, Machado is her last name, and instead the vice president has taken over and will be taking orders directly from the U.S. president, means that Trump, whatever it is that he did in Venezuela, it did not follow the neocon playbook. Therefore, folks, with regards to Iran and whatever is going to come out of it, as we said on the last program, if what we were told by the former CIA officer, John Kiriakou, is accurate, and I think that it probably is, that Netanyahu threatened to use nuclear weapons during the 12-day war, and that this is what forced the president's hand in bombing the nuclear facilities, then a very dangerous precedent has been set. Netanyahu now knows what buttons to push to get Donald Trump to do what he wants him to do, which would include some type of an attack on Iran arising out of all of this instability that doubtless the Jews have caused. Anyway, on that note, folks, we're going to bring up the better half of this of this podcast, our good friend Stas, who's going to dazzle us all, I'm sure, with his opinion on all of this. Stas, are the Jews responsible for all of the instability in Iran right now?
Yes, in fact, as they do it rather openly, but psychologically warfare, that they are, we are with you on the ground, but not only from a distance, we are with you in the field, as they've said, according to the Jerusalem Post. A rare open acknowledgement of activity. Giving that, so they are confident, as we talked about in previous segments of the show. You've got the MEK there. It wasn't just F-35s bombing. There's people on the ground. The Kim Averson.
What is the MEK, Stas? For those who do not know what the MEK is, what is it?
I do the best I can to pronounce it. The Mujahedini Khalq. Am I saying?
Mujahedini Khalq.
Mujahedini Khalq. I apologize.
It
took me years to pronounce Mujahedin.
Okay.
I think that's Afghanistan, but I'm way up. But here we go. Yeah, the MEK, I know it by those initials for a long time. Very active for a long time. Very dangerous.
Terrorists. They are terrorists. Yes.
And in good numbers and experience, embedded deep. And as you as you have informed me, I don't think they're that easy to identify.
Mm-hmm.
Because
they are ethnically Iranian. They are the Iranian equivalent of the Mistarvim that operate the occupied territories, who are Arab Jews who are working for Shin Bet and Mossad, and who undoubtedly played a direct role in the events of October 7th. Yeah, folks, all of the horrible stories you heard about babies being thrown into microwaves and old people being sexually assaulted, it was the Mistarvim who were doing it. It wasn't Hamas. Anyway, so we have MEK on the ground in Iran, doubtless stirring up trouble. Should we be worried about this?
We should absolutely be worried. As far as I know, this is the most unrest since 1979, and Israel has the advantage of leveraging current Iranian economic issues on the regime, and they've got major psychological operations running in the West, lots of information warfare, and just natural organic support by certain elements of the United States in people that we often talk about that are kind of dreaming about the Book of Revelation or very dramatic things, and not the least of which, as I talked to you off podcast, something that I've noticed that we might have talked about and that they don't give President Trump a break on, that Senator Lindsey Graham is always threatening Iran almost every time he speaks, and I always overextend. He's always threatening Russia over Ukraine, always. And I've noticed that the left-wing media...
Threatening Russia.
Yeah, threatening Russia directly, all the time.
Yep.
They never seem to, in my mind, really go after him. And what people who are expecting President Trump to do everything within ease never ever say, well, they got a powerful U.S. senator who is the successor to the powerful mafia-connected John McCain.
John McCain, yep.
And in fact, I don't know what you think about this. I haven't discussed this with you, but I think they've almost got him like laser-focused, whereas McCain kind of drifted.
Yeah.
Sometimes picked up some flack, whereas Lindsey Graham is just this sinister voice that's unquestionable. And I don't know if we talked about this. Nobody gives Trump a break, and they never say he's openly threatening the president on behalf of Benjamin Netanyahu.
Right.
And this is powerful. This guy is powerful in a certain segment of this country. People who really like this fire and brimstone preaching. They seem to give him a pass on all this weirdness and warmongeringness, and they oddly kind of buy what he's saying, like the left behind crowd or the whatever you want to call them. You know, the.
Well, I think the point that you're making, and it is a good point here, is that if the media is beating up on the president, but the media is not beating up on Lindsey Graham, just as it did not beat up on John McCain. That's an indicator, okay, which means, folks, that the media views President Trump as an enemy, does not view Netanyahu's point man in the Senate as an enemy, okay, meaning that the media is taking its orders from Netanyahu and his network. So why is this important? Well, again, folks, this goes back to the discussion that we have been having now for the last 10 years about who really owns Donald Trump, okay, depending on where you go for your information or your disinformation, as the case may be. You will hear that Miriam Adelson and Netanyahu and the Jews own Trump, but this is not the case, folks. If they did own him, the media would be easy on him. He would get the Obama treatment, even though it was a left-wing media. Let's think back, folks, to what happened on the morning of 9/11. Okay, we had George W. Bush as president, and the media was resoundingly behind him, saying, thank God we have Bush as president when this happened instead of Al Gore. Okay, so yes, they answer to Benjamin Netanyahu, folks, and the media attacks against the president now, the attacks against him in Congress are all being steered by Netanyahu. That's the point you were trying to make. Is that correct, Stas?
Much better than I said it. And they just, to me now, all the evils of the world are now on the Gentile King of America, Donald
J.
President.
Yeah.
He's the only one in the Epstein file. He's the destroyer of Venezuela without any background information.
Mm-hmm.
I'm willing to concede, you know, and nobody freak out over that there could be some of the aggression involved in Venezuela is necessary geopolitics that this American Roman Empire has to do.
As soon as the oil issue came into this, I said to myself, okay, what is this really bad thing headed our way that the president took emergency action to get his hands on all of that oil so close to the United States? What is this really bad thing coming that he did this as an emergency action? Okay. So yeah, there's a countless amount, incalculable amount of issues involving all of this, but one of those, folks, is not that Donald Trump is an imperialist and that he wants to crush all countries in order to steal their resources and feed into international capitalism and all of the rest of that. It is not as simple as that, and it's not as convoluted as that. Let's talk about this Iranian business.
Wicked quick. Yep. It's not Donald J. Trump's fault that Treasury Secretary under Bill Clinton, Robert Rubin, gave and or lent untold billions, maybe trillions, to China to move every farmer out of the rural areas of China and encourage them to move by the millions and billions to the cities and work as slaves at Foxconn and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. That ain't him. I think that he would have liked to have done business straight up with a nationalistic China that JFK fought for, and they turned him down. And then you had Chiang Kai-shek, and then you had the French Connection drug thing because his soldiers got in business and blah, 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 blah. That if we played things straight with other countries, we wouldn't be building up to this World War III. Sorry, I went off topic.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yep.
And that's not his fault.
So on that note of World War III, Stas, I mentioned earlier that this business with Iran is very, and I'll tell you why. The Iranians have stated at the highest government level that they're not going to wait to be attacked before they act preemptively. Okay. Specifically, I think it was the head of the rocket forces or something like that. It may have been the chief of staff of the Iranian military, said they're not going to simply react, that they are going to strike preemptively if they detect an imminent security threat from Israel or the U.S., and they specifically mentioned targeting American military installations throughout the region. So that would be Iraq, that would be Bahrain, Qatar, all over the place. Okay. So, you know, as much as I understand why the Iranians would issue a threat like this at the same time, again, folks, it's a stupid thing to do. You just handed the Jews the ammunition they need to make a believable story out of a missile being launched from within Iranian territory that lands on an American military base and kills a bunch of servicemen. And then what is the president supposed to do? Okay. Now, let's talk about this for a second, folks, in underscoring just how razor's edge everything is, how hair trigger everything is. Think back to the 12-day war, folks, what we found out since that time, how the Jews were in Iran for 10 years. 10 years building drone bases. They were smuggling in parts for drones and other weapons that were used in that 12-day war. They spent an entire decade smuggling these things in a piece at a time, so that when they were ready to go, they had everything set using Iranian spies to push the buttons on these things. What are the chances that they have ballistic missiles inside Iran? Because that's the big threat right now that we're hearing all about, is Iran's ballistic missile program and how it's as dangerous as the nuclear program. This is exactly what Lindsey Graham said just a few weeks ago after making his 8th or 9th trip to Israel, got back from there since October 7th. He's been there 8 or 9 times since October 7th, and that's where he goes to get his orders, folks. He meets with Netanyahu, and then he comes back and tells President Trump, okay, this is what, Mr. President. So the threat now is not Iran's nukes, because they have been taken out of the picture. Now it's Iran's missiles. So, Stas, what are the chances that, besides building drone bases in preparation for this mission to destroy ancient Persia, modern Iran, that the Israelis have also smuggled in all of the parts that they need for missiles that can be launched from Iranian territory that then wind up landing on American military installations throughout the region, resulting in the deaths of scores of American servicemen, and which forces the U.S. president to act lest he wind up being impeached? What are the chances of that?
I think this is a highly probable scenario, unfortunately, very unfortunately. And I think mm-hmm. they got the capability where there's stories of guys on the ground with rocket launches that blew away scientists and all types mm-hmm. of activity in the Operation Rising Lion that happened.
Mm-hmm.
As you mentioned to me or on this show, the 60 Minutes interview, the Israeli intelligence officer indicated this is just the beginning. So the Operation Grim Beeper was a taste of what's going to unfold. So who knows what they've got mm-hmm. on the ground. And certainly they could do an undetectable ballistic missile attack
yeah.
on American mm-hmm. forces, forcing Donald Trump to do exactly what they want and become the evil character that the pundits who should have known better
mm-hmm.
have framed him as. He will any good that he's attempted to do in staying out of war will be negated by the fact that he's not going to be able to tell his supporters that he's not going to blow Iran away because they shot up an American base or sunk a ship or both.
Mm-hmm.
All plausible. And they could definitely pull that off. It looks like they're operating. I mean, the Iranians have said they've caught a Mossad operative. That could be, but it's not. I don't think it's been corroborated yet. And it looks like they, at least in that first operation, they pretty much operated almost unimpeded.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately. So they've got a lot of choices, and your scenario is got to be high, high on the list.
Mm-hmm.
Because Trump has been doing everything he can to stall them, jam them up in a major leverage war. But mm-hmm. when they get a chance to, as you said to me off podcast, take that pool shot, they're going to They're going to take it, and they have been ready for, as you've demonstrated, for 3,000 years for this. So they've got something up their sleeve, and that is got to be the number one most likely scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Unless, hopefully, somehow, miracle within miracles,
mm-hmm.
Trump's people have been able to rid themselves of being compromised in terms of their communications.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have no idea to what lengths the American technology has been sabotaged, like we've talked about before. And it sounds crazy, but you have to take elements of every podcast we have and place it in this, because now we're moving closer and closer to, I don't know what to call it, the kill shot or the moment. They're not going to wait another 3,000 years till these prophecies and these protocols and everything they do, both politically and religiously and socially. This is it. The target Iran is a big one. This is an enemy, a biblical enemy of the Muslim people, the Persian people before that, all enemies. And then they'll attack, mm-hmm. they'll finish off Rome after that, but this is a big prize, and mm-hmm. they're not going to let go.
Yep.
They're not going to let go of this. I don't see it. They're not going to let Donald J. Trump get in their way by any
mm-hmm.
Or any.
Yeah, and you know, let's just bring what has happened in the last few days into this, Stas, because, you know, first of all, folks, the notion that no shooting took place in Minneapolis, okay, forget it. I'm sure that there are probably people who are saying that it's a hoax, that they were all crisis actors and all of the rest of that. No, folks, this woman was shot and killed. We're not going to get into the forensics of this and deciding whether or not I don't think that it was a setup. I don't think that it was a false flag or anything like that. I think that it was just the natural course that had been put into motion a long time ago. Okay, you get these cops, these police officers who are being physically assaulted, sometimes killed, doing their jobs, and they're ramped up, and then takes somebody to do something stupid, like happened the other day with this woman. You know, hitting the gas pedal, and but the point is, folks, is that, and this is one of the things that we've talked about on this program, it may very well be that what Netanyahu has planned is that things in this country fall apart to the point where the president cannot involve himself in anything taking place in the Middle East. Okay. You know, if all of a sudden now, all of these leftist agitators who are being run by Mossad, folks, okay, we're just going to say that for what it is. If Netanyahu was Trump's buddy, the way that we're told by these various people with their podcasts and websites say, then his power is such that he could have his network go to these agitators and say, cease and desist. Okay, cease and desist, or we're going to put a bullet in your head, okay? The notion that that all of this is not being affected by Netanyahu in Israel is just not a discussion worth having, okay? It is, folks. This is Netanyahu's just like sure that Donald Trump and his people are on the ground protesting against Netanyahu, against the judicial reform. I'm sure they have their hands involved in the criminal investigations in order to put pressure on Netanyahu. Likewise, Netanyahu's people are running all of these anti-ICE protests here in the U.S. So, again, folks, don't want to sound like a broken record here, okay, but if Trump were the slave to Netanyahu that we are told by so many people that he is, and if Netanyahu were his best friend, we wouldn't be seeing the kinds of I mean, we even had massive protests up here this weekend, you know, in these sleepy little towns in the Pacific Northwest, okay, the most conservative area in the country. So somebody is pushing these buttons, folks. Somebody's pushing these buttons, these deep state buttons. And his name is Benjamin Netanyahu. So bringing this thing back to the nucleus of it is that if things really start to break down, if there's another killing or something like that on the part of these ICE officers here in the U.S., you could find the president so wrapped up with dealing with that that he's not able to hold Netanyahu back from what he plans to do against Iran. Stas, your thoughts?
Absolutely, and I'm going to take the easy way out. I'm not going to play any favorites. I'm going to say that this woman was somehow involved in the communistic activities in the U.S., the Antifa, and they have training in psychologically, emotionally draining and provocative violence, and so too does the ICE. And any cop in America apparently is at least in some way tainted by some kind of training that comes from some
Israel
country in the Near East.
Absolutely.
All have, you know, so there was a day long ago, probably before my time, you know, when America's cops was known by the first name. Maybe they didn't even carry a pistol. And, you know, they were your friend. And, you know, if you did something wrong, they would rough you up a little bit. You'd do some jail time and come back in and go back to work. And you were an American or something like that. Now the police are expected to, you know, have all this training and be like flawless. And yet they're infused with this violence, which I do believe did play a role in the George Floyd thing. I think that that cop had some of that training, whether or not it was justified in that situation.
You're talking about training from Israel.
It's from Israel. From, you know, Virginia or something. It's not our CIA Virginia farm boys training these guys. So although they have involvement, and no one knows to what degree they're tainted with Israel training and philosophy. You know, how much of our spy services and military are our own mentally now? How screwed up are they? Nobody knows.
Yep.
And nobody knows. What people have missed is, and, you know, sure, I could be wrong. I've probably said this a bunch of times on here, that that the pundits that we sometimes grudgingly, and some would criticize us for going at him too much, have called him like a Mossad stenographer, Radcliffe. And yet they haven't read what the establishment has said. Take a look at the New York Times. I forget the guy's name, Tim Weiner, whatever. That he criticized Radcliffe of being trying to purge the CIA of MAGA adherents. So there you go. They haven't even looked at that. So they're being lazy. Like, who is this guy? You know, because that sounds intriguing. He's bought and owned by Mossad, and therefore whatever. But he's
no,
not.
Radcliffe was not trying to purge CIA of MAGA people. He was trying to fill CIA with
fill
MAGA
CIA
people.
CIA and purge purge of anti-MAGA. I apologize.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
No problem.
So what is that? I mean, then at some point that's a patriot. And, you know, the academic system for decade after decade, I get it. They'll say we are dedicated to the destruction of black and brown people, indigenous people. And, you know, some of this is the dark legacy of America. It is, but we, you know, we do the best to confront it and deal better with it. You cannot destroy the whole country in this. And, you know, they haven't taken a look that Trump, he really is what he is.
Yeah.
He is anti-establishment. He got into this. He clearly, even emotionally, even socially, himself as a regular guy, we cannot discount this. He's constantly attacked as a regular guy, a dumb person by the establishment. They don't like him. He's not Mr. Davos. If we go into the conspiracy kook world, he's not a Bilderberger. They don't like him. He never was one of them. He's a regular New Yorker. But his deal-making is perhaps the greatest threat since, like, John F. Kennedy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
To the real establishment, to the real New World Order, as Mike Piper used to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, he would encourage people to read critically the literature of the establishment. So Michael Collins Piper taught us about the super class,
mm-hmm.
you know, that these people dwell on, but they're not applying it to it. And, you know, as a lot of people that I talk to have given up, they're like, everybody's controlled lock, stock, and barrel. You can't fight, you know, the system. But that's not true. There is power plays. There's a war between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, and it's real. There's a war between a less and less a disappearing group between the Likud Party
mm-hmm.
and things like that, which is because it's difficult when we see everybody stand and give Prime Minister Netanyahu a standing ovation. That doesn't mean that in the hallways there aren't rank-and-file military intelligence mm-hmm. people. Yeah, I'm going out a limb here. Journalists, stockbroker guys who've been screwed over. Yes, mm-hmm. there's a legion of them, and they want payback, and they don't have a pipeline to communicate like their enemies out of state of Israel have, who control, mm-hmm. who I concede control Washington Post, New York Times. And again, a reason why I'm ranting like this is because I talk to some of my friends, and they go, well, you know, because it's evil, I don't read the Times or the Washington Post anymore. Or none of them check out Times of Israel even a little bit, apparently. Not even a little bit.
Yep.
They don't look at the Forward. They don't look at the Jerusalem Post. They don't look at La Haaretz. Nothing. And I see that with these big guys who don't get me wrong, I love Colonel McGregor or whatever, but they really don't go into that much. It's all been going all 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, anti-Trump. It's his fault.
Mm-hmm.
They've
yep.
fallen into exactly where they're supposed to be. And if it gets worse, the only supporters of Trump are going to be guys who want to obliterate Iran because
yep.
they think the Bible says so in such fashion.
Yeah, exactly. That's a very good point. And again, folks, if you're having trouble piecing together what we're talking about here, it's, you know, don't fall into these traps of doing the Jews dirty work for them by assigning to the president things that simply aren't true. Okay, now again, going back to what happened at the end of June with the 12-day war and the fact that the president bombed the nuclear facilities in Iran, nearly with one voice, okay, the entire alternative media, the conspiracy movement, whatever you want to call it, they were saying, oh, look at this, Trump lied to us. He said no more foreign entanglements, no more wars in the Middle East, and then look what he did. And then we find out, folks, about a month ago, okay, that Netanyahu threatened to use nuclear weapons against Iran. And we got this from what I would consider not just to be a reliable source, but an impeccable source, okay? But at the time, you know, was there any pause? Was there any, all right, let's just take a deep breath here and look at other possibilities, folks? No, there wasn't any of that. Now, again, I hate to paint such a bleak picture here, folks, but the president is going to need as much political support as he can get if we're going to get through this thing without the Jews incinerating the entire planet. Okay. Again, the fact that this explosive news, no pun intended, that has been brought to us by this former CIA officer about Netanyahu issuing this threat to use nuclear weapons against Iran. Folks, this should be the story that is on the lips of every alternative media person, outlet, the pro-Palestine groups, the anti-Zionist groups, and nobody is talking about it that I know of. Maybe they are. Maybe I'm not looking in the right places, but nobody understands the gravity of how important this is. It is the most important story of our lifetime, that Netanyahu threatened to incinerate 15 million people, and that this is what forced the president's hand in bombing the nuclear facilities. Okay? My point is, folks, as I've said often, all of us involved in this, we're all involved in an intelligence operation, okay? We're not here to amuse ourselves or to hobby ourselves, meaning to find a hobby, okay? We should be involved in this for one reason and one reason only, which is to defeat these people who intend to destroy us. And what that means is that there's no room for sloppiness, okay? Don't go out and tell people that Trump is owned by Netanyahu when he isn't. Don't go out and tell people that the president wants to start World War III when he doesn't. Okay? You have to be smarter. You have to be more precise about this. Otherwise, folks, what's going to happen is that the political energy that the president needs in order to succeed in what it is that he is trying to do, which is to pull the lit fuse out of this bomb known as World War III and Armageddon, he's not going to have that political energy to do it, and the Jews are going to succeed in burning down the entire planet. Stas, your thoughts?
Oh, definitely. Let me double down on your observation of former CIA officer John Kariakou and his revolution, with his disclosure that he did his best to put something out there. You know, when we do these podcasts, we analyze the best we can and we game it and we try to best tell what's the truth. Well, this time a professional guy gave us a bone here.
with a lot of meat on it,
and he clarified something that we were gaming right on this very podcast, which between me and you right now, I think we already knew what he said to be true by our analysis. And then we got some proof.
We said it on here.
So, and you know, this guy has experience that is crucial to the pre-World War III situation that we're in now. Mm-hmm. He's a CIA officer. He is relatively recently retired. I like, again, McGregor. Yeah, sometimes Scott Ritter, all these guys. But this guy's experience is much more.
Towers over theirs. Towers.
Yes, yeah, towers over theirs. I mean, he's a street guy, and his experience is what is happening now.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, he was involved. He stood up. He wasn't willing to cover up this torture program thing, and the guy paid the price. He's a real patriot. And he said this, and he said really what logically made sense. So everybody's like, Trump is in on it, you know. And of course, nobody should be bombing anybody's sovereign soil in any circumstances. But this was what Trump had to do to feed the wolves.
Well, to save 15 million human lives.
15 million, and his face wasn't lying when he looked very scared and unsettled, and he tells the people of Tehran to get out. Now, if he is an agent and the creature, the slave of Benjamin Netanyahu and Adelson and all the rest, there's no reason, guys. This is like when some fool said Michael Collins Piper was an agent of the Zionists or something. Well, when was Mike going to turn and do something for them? You know, and this is the case. He would have never, ever, he would have let that be, and then he would have either let the Israelis finish off Iran and have their back or jump in all the way. And people would not believe this to be possible. Somehow the media experts in this country would take some of the heat off of Donald Trump.
Absolutely.
And
yes.
People would be like, geez, and only the most rabid would hate him. And a lot of other people, well, he's not that bad because he killed the Iranians. And they're not good. We don't know why. I'm going to go on a limb here. I think a lot of Americans probably confuse the Iranians with the Afghani people, with the Saudis, with anybody from that region.
Oh, no, no, you're not going out on a limb at all.
Yeah.
Trust me, okay?
Yeah.
The conversations that I have with people, it's amazing that they lump the Indians, the Hindus, a billion Hindus, and a billion Muslims in together, that they're all the same. So, yeah, and don't forget, as I was having a conversation today, I was reminding people, Iran was the first Islamic country that we as Americans were taught to hate, okay, 1979, and the hostage crisis and all of the rest of that. So, and this is what the president, you know, this is the minefield through which he has to operate in every day, the fact that the American people just don't know anything, and he cannot, there are conversations with them that he can't have because they're so infantile in their understanding of geopolitics. And this is you know, this is something that I meant to bring up on the last program, folks. It's something that I'll say it now, and I want you to think about. You know, all of these television shows that feature the zombie apocalypse, okay? I mean, there's a reason why so many of these things have taken off in the fashion that they have. You know, and I even see people with, you know, stickers on their cars, you know, zombie attack response vehicle or something like that. Okay, it's real, folks. The zombie apocalypse is real, all right? Now, it's not going to happen next week. It's not going to happen next month. It's here now. Now, are people eating each other? No. But the degradation of the thought processes, of the intelligence of the people, it's a done deal. Okay, the zombie apocalypse is now. People can't think straight. And all of this other stuff that we see on the movies and television shows about them eating each other, if that does happen, folks, it's just a formality. All right. The fact of the matter is that the president, you know, this minefield that he has to walk through every day in order to keep the world from being set on fire is more mine than field. Anyway, Stas, this was a fascinating discussion. You were brilliant as usual. And by the way, I was told today by one of the listeners to tell you specifically that you are brilliant and that you're the only person who could do this program here with me and to do it in the fashion that you do. What do you want to tell the folks before we say goodnight?
Don't get sucked into this violence. Don't think that it's moral to overthrow Iran. I don't know if I'm overstating this. The American people, the zombification, has a lot to do with the removal of clothing that it must be these tyrants so the Iranian woman could be like other women and the rest. And this is very vulgar, I'm saying, but I think this is what it comes down to in the brain.
Sure.
They're having a lot of these things that this is the big thing, and we got to kill these people so the Iranian people can get undressed.
So they can have porn and fornicate like we do in this country.
Yeah, and then everybody's mentally ill over here, so we're so free, everybody can't even this is my opinion about America. They can't function because of the drugs and the pornography. And even the pop culture is making people very shallow here.
Well, they have got a three-second attention span.
Yeah.
And it's 3-second attention span of the equivalent of an oversexed and horny 14-year-old. Okay?
Yeah.
So, and this is what, folks, this is the world we live in now. Okay. Again, we can't stress to you strongly enough how late in the hour it is, how dire the situation is. Don't take anything for granted. So anyway, Stas, thank you once again for an invaluable contribution to this discussion. And folks, you know, I don't want to end the program on a down note. What I'm hoping, possibly, that the president will do with regards to Iran is maybe he will go to his friends in the Gulf countries and say, hey, listen, can you dump $1 trillion into the Iranian economy in order to quiet things down? I mean, forget about lifting sanctions. If the president did that, he'd be impeached within the week, okay, even by his own people, because, again, the American people, the very first country in the Middle East they were taught to hate is Iran. So, but let's just wait and see what kinds of possible magic tricks he has up his sleeve. But the bottom line is, folks, these people out there, their podcasts and their blogs and all of the rest of that, pretensing themselves as geopolitical experts and who say that that the president is taking his orders from Miriam Adelson and Benjamin Netanyahu. No, folks. I don't care what kind of insignias they have on their lapels. I don't care what kind of advanced degrees they have. If they're making this statement without factoring in that the president and Netanyahu are at each other's throats, then in my opinion, they're just not worth listening to. Anyway, Stas, that's it for today. Hang on there unless there's something else you wanted to say. I'm going to close out the program, but I want to talk to you off the air.
No, thank you for letting me on again, and I hope Mike is enjoying the show too today.
I'm sure that he is. Yep. Okay, folks, so that was the invaluable Stas with his irreplaceable contribution to this discussion. And, you know, I wish we could do this in a more orderly fashion, folks, but things are just moving so quickly. And, you know, there really isn't any oxygen out there. I hate to constantly harp on this, but, you know, the kinds of intelligent discussions and analysis and perspective that needs to take place these days, it simply isn't. Like I said a few minutes ago, you know, the zombie apocalypse is now, okay? People just aren't thinking straight anymore. And so, you know, my good friend and I, and then a few others that, you know, that with whom I consult on these things, you know, we basically have to put this together, you know, with very little. There's very little oxygen out there if we're comparing oxygen to intelligent and fact-based analysis and commentary. There really isn't much. And as I said before, the fact that this former CIA officer and his explosive statement about Netanyahu threatening to mass murder 15 million Iranians, the fact that this discussion has not taken off is not a good sign. Not a good sign at all. Anyway, folks, that's it for today, this edition of the Ugly Truth broadcast, Sunday, January the 11th, 2026, the year of our Lord Jesus Christ, King of the Gentiles. Remember, folks, we are Gentiles, something for which we should be eternally proud and grateful. And, you know, there's no reason for a sheep to pretend to be a wolf or an alligator. And, you know, that's what Jesus, that's how he described us as his flock, his sheep. You know, my sheep know me and I know them. I am the good shepherd and they will never be taken from me. The Jews are not your friends, folks. They're not your friends. They are institutionally and constitutionally driven to destroy you. That's something that you should remember every morning upon waking and every night before lying down and going to sleep. Anyway, that's it for today, folks. Until we meet again, go out and do your part for this planet of the Gentiles, because if we don't save this planet for ourselves, folks, it really is going to be turned into hell on earth.